I also saw under the sun this example of wisdom that greatly impressed me. There was once a small city with only a few people in it, and a powerful king came against it, surrounded it, and built huge siege works against it. Now there lived in that city a man, poor but wise, and he saved the city by his wisdom. But nobody remembered that poor man. So I said, wisdom is better than strength. But the poor man's wisdom is despised, and his words are no longer heeded. The quiet words of the wise are more to be heeded than the shouts of a ruler of fools. Wisdom is better than weapons of war. One sinner destroys much good. This is the reading of God's word.
And thanks be to God. Let me just get the screen down. All right. I get the feeling that some of you, like me, have been enjoying some of our Canada 150 celebrations. We've had visitors this past week. We went with them to the Calgary Stampede, and it was a good reminder of why we haven't been there for a few years. I paid $20 for a slim chance to win a toy that was worth probably less than $20, and I came away with nothing. The Calgary Stampede is a big celebration. It's a big deal. Lots of people get together, and some of us don't quite understand it. That's just the way that it, the way that these festivals work out. A whole lot of hubbub and a whole lot of fuss and money have gone into our Canada 150 celebrations. And as a nation, we get together and celebrate these landmarks, and in a lot of ways, it's good. And in a lot of ways, maybe not so good. It's great to connect with our past, to think about the people who have gone before us, who've made sacrifices to make this country work. It's great to think about the reasons why our ancestors came here, why we came here. And it's great to participate in something that unites East and West, that unites established and immigrant, that unites English, French, etc., etc., etc. All of these things are good. All of these things make Canada 150 a good thing. But there are a number of parts of it that are a little bit less good, perhaps. We have a tendency to sort of gloss over history. We really only remember the good stories, and we sort of reframe the stories as though they were all good, and we leave out a lot of the bad. Part of the celebrations for us have been participating in this ritual, in celebrating the good and evaluating the bad. And one of the central institutions to celebrate Canadian identity is the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. And I grew up as a proud Canadian, as someone who loved to study history, but I also grew up watching a lot of TV, far more TV than my parents wanted me to watch. And I watched a lot of CBC. And when I was growing up, maybe these were simpler TV shows, maybe it was simpler times, but there was sort of a format, a formula that you could rely on. So does anybody remember which TV show this is from? Close. It was Road to Avonlea. So sort of a spin-off of Anne of Green Gables, set in the same community in Prince Edward Island. And you might recognize this little blonde-haired girl is Sarah Polley, who's gone on to do a lot of other film stuff. These were the children who made the show popular, a bunch of kids growing up, exploring their identity and coming into their own as children in early Canada. And the moral of the story was always that good and virtuous people will win out eventually if they continue to be good and virtuous people. And at the center of this TV show were the kings, the king family. Some of them were good, some of them had a little bit too much power and pride, and they had to sort of navigate that. And it was good, wholesome programming. And that was the moral of the story, that good people prevail. Maybe not at first, but eventually. There's even an episode where they played hockey against this professional traveling team, and they shouldn't have won, but because they worked hard and were good people, they won the game. It was ridiculous, but that was the format of the TV show. These might be a little bit less familiar to you. These were the teenagers of Degrassi Junior High, set in a high school in Toronto, and it followed the hijinks of these teenagers and their difficulties of adolescence and overcoming stereotypes. And the moral of the story in this show was always, no matter what a person looks like on the outside, they are good and worthwhile people to become friends with. Right? Even if they have spiky hair, even if their parents were born in a different part of the world, even if their family had money, even if they were trying really hard to be cool, it didn't matter, they were still good people. That's the moral of the story. Every week you would tune in and hear essentially the same story. This is a more recent show set in the Canadian prairies following a Muslim family and their extended worship community who are just going through everyday life trying to convince people that they are not evil. Well, the moral of the story is that Muslims are not evil. And somehow they stretched a few seasons out of that with, you know, quirky Canadian humor and whatever. And that was the moral of the story, that Muslims are not as bad as we think they are. That's what you would see every week. Then, just the beginning of this year, there was a new TV show called Pure, set in a traditional Mennonite community, following a old colony pastor as he's trying to navigate between his spiritual calling and trying to rescue his community from the grip of drugs. And it seems the moral of the story, if there is one, is that Mennonites aren't as pure as you think they are. Right? Every time somebody tells a good story, there's always a twist. There has to be something unexpected. Because if you know what's going to happen at the end of the story, you stop paying attention. And this happens to us, that some of us, we feel like we know the Bible, we don't really need to read it anymore. Because we know what happens. It's wrong. You need to keep reading. There are new twists. There are new understandings. There are new revelations that will come to you every time that you read it. But it seems that this is sort of a depressing development, right? That Mennonite people, over all of the time that they've been in Canada, long before the 150 years that the country started, Mennonites have generally worked hard, built up a good reputation of being peaceful people, of being faithful people, of being hard-working people, and all of that reputation brings us to the point where the CBC uses that to tell their story about how we're not as good as we think we are. When you turn to the Bible and you're wanting to find depressing words, which probably doesn't happen very often, but if you do that, you turn to the book of Ecclesiastes. The book of Ecclesiastes is a crazy maze of depression and then hope and then depression and then a little bit of hope, but still a little bit of depression. I should assign that as your summer reading. Read the book of Ecclesiastes. And in the book of Ecclesiastes, the teacher, whether it's King Solomon or whoever it is, the teacher writes down their thoughts as they are seeking the meaning of life. And so they look for meaning in wealth, and they look for meaning in acquiring knowledge. They look for meaning in a lot of places, and they don't find it there. Twist ending, they find it in God. There you go. It's still worth reading. But in here, the teacher is talking about having heard this story. That in a small town, so you have to imagine sort of before our military and government systems, there's a small town without a lot of people and obviously without a big military. And then a mighty king comes, surrounds it, and waged a terrible war against it. Or in Dorset's translation, I think it said laid siege to it. So then the king would surround the city so that no food supplies could get in, and the people would eventually either die of starvation or just give up. And this is what the king is going to do, because power wins. That's the story of kings and militaries. But in the town, there was a wise man. Even though he was poor, he was wise. And through his wisdom, the small town survived and didn't have to give in to the king. But no one remembered that poor man. Everybody remembered the king. Everybody remembered the king's military victories. But nobody remembered the poor man. This is a snapshot of the book of Ecclesiastes. That here is this terrible pattern of might and power and wealth ruling over weakness and poverty and simplicity. So then, is it still worthwhile to be wise if nobody remembers you? This is the question. Right? So this would be a good premise for a TV show. But we don't get to make those choices. Within our identity as Canadians, we tell stories. We participate in stories. And the struggle sometimes is to know which of these stories are good and which ones we should allow ourselves to be a part of and which ones we should fight against. Sometimes the choice is obvious, and sometimes it's not so easy. So, part of our story as Canadians is the legacy of our armed forces. So this is the crest of the 228th Battalion. And this is a story that not a lot of people know. But after World War I, during World War I, the 228th Battalion was an assembled group of soldiers who were training and getting ready to be shipped overseas to fight in the war. But they weren't needed yet. And so because among that group of soldiers, there were a number of hockey players. They decided to join the National Hockey Association, the precursor of the NHL, as one of its teams. And so this team of soldiers traveled from city to city. They didn't have their own home arena. They traveled to city to all of the arenas of all of the established teams. And they did pretty well. They won over half of their games. And they sold out every game. Of all of the teams that played in the league, they were the most popular. More popular than the Toronto Arenas, more popular than the Montreal Canadiens. These were the biggest draw in the league. Why? Because we love soldiers. When you go to a Calgary Flames game, they bring out some kind of soldier, active, retired, recently returned, any of those, and there's a bigger cheer and ovation for that soldier than there is for the second goal of the game. Why? Because we love soldiers. They are part of our story. Their bravery and their heroism inspires us to be more heroic and brave ourselves as Canadians. So this is part of our story. Oh, that's one I was going to show later. Okay. The Canadian Armed Forces needs more and more soldiers. And So, okay, there we go. Let's go back to this one. So they recruit people from time to time. And in their recruitment, they promise a lot of things. Respectability. There was a poster once that showed a woman in regular clothes, and she was a little bit downcast and sad, and the same woman wearing military garb. And her uniform was the bigger picture, and then over her was a quote, presumably from her, and it said, "People respect me now." Canadian Armed Forces. Right? That's a clear story, right? That before they didn't, because she was just a normal person. But now that she's wearing the symbol on her clothes, now that she's wearing the uniform, she is respectable. If you want to be respectable, join the army, right? Very clear story. That's what they're pushing. Also, if you join the army, they will train you to fix vehicles, they will train you to fly airplanes, they will train you to do a whole bunch of things that later on you can do for money. So, there are, they have career training, you have the opportunities, join in. They don't mention anything about traveling overseas and killing people, right? It just doesn't get included in the advertisements. Another thing that doesn't get included in the advertisements is the possibility of getting killed. So we send soldiers overseas to protect people over there and also to protect us here, right? And so this is a part of the story that you will hear, that we are free because our soldiers have gone over there to purchase that freedom for us. To ensure that freedom. And the way that they ensure that is putting themselves in harm's way, being willing to die so that we can have freedom. And in Canada's role in Afghanistan, the official number, and it's sometimes higher than the official number, but the official number of soldiers that died is 158. And where we grew up in Ontario, there is a stretch of road called the Highway of Heroes. And whenever a soldier returned from Afghanistan in a coffin, it would land in the airport in Trenton, and it would be loaded onto a hearse and then flown to Pearson Airport, where it would be flown to whatever community the soldier was from. And whenever this happened, there would be an alert sent out, and people would know that a Canadian soldier had died, and so they would stand on bridges, they would stand on the sides of the roads, and they would salute as the procession made its way past. A beautiful symbol of courage, a beautiful symbol of loyalty and appreciation from our country. And people stood on that bridge as a way of saying thank you to this person who gave their life for our freedom. As though it were a transaction. As though every time we're sort of short on freedom, we just send a few more soldiers over. Because if that's not the story, if that soldier's death didn't give any freedom, then what are they doing over there? That's the scary idea that people aren't comfortable to contemplate. And so not only did 158 Canadian soldiers die overseas, of the hundreds who returned safe and sound, 54 committed suicide. 54! In the short time since the end of the Afghan mission until now, that's a lot. So why is that? It isn't that we are sending over weaker people who can't handle the realities of life. These are our best, bravest, strongest young men and women who are trained to handle this. And there are a lot of explanations behind this, but I believe that a part of it is that they come back and realize that the story that they have been told is not true. They come back expecting to be heroes, but they aren't. Gordon Lightfoot sang a song talking about soldiers, and he told about a number of people, but he says, "And see the soldier with his gun who must be dead to be admired." We forget about our veterans. Every political party, every political candidate makes promises to give more money to veterans. But every party, every leader has cut money from veterans. And so veterans come back and they get a hero's welcome when they return. But they don't get a hero's welcome in terms of job opportunities. They don't get a hero's welcome in terms of mental health care that they so badly need. They don't get the hero's welcome that we promise them in the story that we tell. And they're suffering because of it. This is the story of the Canadian military. Jesus tells a different story. You might know the story from Matthew 26 where Jesus is in the garden and he's praying. He's with his followers. And while he's with them, while he's praying and asking God to protect him, to give him strength to do what he needs to do, soldiers come to arrest him. And among his disciples are people who don't believe the story of their own weakness, right? They see Jesus as a man of strength and power. And so they think, we can't allow these soldiers to stop us. We can't allow these soldiers to touch Jesus. And so one of Jesus' disciples takes a sword away from one of the soldiers and cuts off that soldier's ear. That disciple is protecting Jesus, is acting out of love for Jesus. What more noble cause for violence could there be for this disciple? But Jesus said to his disciple to put the sword back. Put the sword back in its place. All those who, the more common translation that you'll know is all those who live by the sword will die by the sword. All right, the common English says it a little bit differently. So Jesus says, listen, if you rely on that sword for your strength and for your authority and power, that sword will take that from you. That is the story of the sword. So, the idea behind this sermon series, as contrived as it might sound, was to sort of turn it around. So the CBC tells a story about Mennonite faith, and they don't maybe do that great of a job of it because they don't know our story. They think they do. And so we need, if we could turn that around, we would tell their story differently. And so, bear with me as I sort of envision the TV show that I might write if we were to tell the story of the military. Episode 1 is called Signs. And I've borrowed a character from my book, so if you've read it, you might recognize that. There's a military base where a number of young men are being trained to fly airplanes for the Canadian Army, for the Air Force. And the young men are coming, and they're being indoctrinated, and they're being trained and built up for their task. Nearby is a farmer, simple farmer, and he has done his neighbor a favor, and the neighbor sends over his son with a big fancy tractor asking if the son can do something for him. The farmer doesn't really want to till up his soil, but he has an idea. He sees the planes flying overhead, and he sees the young men getting ready to go off to fight. And he asks the farmer's son, If he can plow a message into the field, using GPS technology, which becomes easier for the young neighbor, he plows the message, "Love your enemies," into the field. And so the pilots flying overhead see the message, report it to their senior officer. The senior officer decides that he's going to teach these young men about the role of connecting with their community and point out the errors in this simple farmer's ways. So he brings the two young men over to the farmer and then challenges him to explain why the military is so evil if they are able to provide freedom in this particular way, if they were able to help overseas in this way, and lists off a long list of stories. And the simple farmer nods, and the simple farmer smiles, and he serves them tea, and he serves them cookies, and he thanks them for coming. He isn't convinced, and as they are leaving, the farmer says to the young men, not to the commanding officer, he says, "You boys be careful out there. This man will take you to hell and back. But God be with you." They don't know what to make of this crazy old man. The commanding officer tells them to ignore that, and they go back to training. Episode 2, deployment. They are getting ready to be sent overseas. They've trained. They've learned a few things. And before they go out, they are going to celebrate. They go into town at the local bar where one of them meets a young woman. And they're chatting and they're laughing. And it turns out that this young woman is the daughter of the simple farmer. And she's sort of embarrassed by her dad. But she likes these guys. They're friendly. And she promises to be in touch with them. She gives them her email address. They become friends on Facebook, and she promises to be in touch. So the guys go overseas. They run a few routine missions. Everything looks fine. The messages go back and forth. A friendship is building, maybe a little more. There has to be a little bit more because it's a TV show. And the story develops. The young men are overseas. They're confident. And we start to find out that maybe this simple farmer wasn't such a great father. And is his story as good and wholesome as he thought it would be? We don't know. Story 3, landmines. The young men who are overseas start to realize that they're in deeper than they thought they were. They start to interact with the local people. Some of them are bitter and angry and hateful. And then the young men feel justified in coming in with guns and bombs and planes. But some of them are good and helpful and friendly and peaceful. And so sometimes when they drop bombs, are the good people getting hit as well as the bad? They don't know. And as they're going from one base to another, their convoy is hit. Their machine is knocked over by a landmine. They take fire. They fire back. And one of them is killed. One of them is badly injured. And one of them witnesses the whole thing and couldn't do anything to stop it. So the bad guys run off. What's going to happen next? Episode 4. Infirmed. The injured soldier is returned to the base, is wrapped up, is tended to, and the mission ends. The soldiers return. The injured soldier and the healthy soldier. They come back, they're given medication there, but all the while they have kept in touch with this young woman. All the while they've been sharing with her their struggles. And she has been sharing with them her struggles about her father, about the things that he teaches, and about her desire to become something more than the father of this crazy old farmer. So she connects with them. They start to hang out together. They start to talk about stuff. The guy who's injured starts taking steps. Maybe he'll be able to walk again. Maybe. He's still working through in his mind what's happened. But the guy who came back healthy can't. Can't work it out. And so he goes off on his own, unable to deal with it, and takes his own life. Episode 6, Redemption. This is a pretty dark TV show, I know. Pretty uncharacteristically dark for me. But this is the way that the story, I think, would need to be told. This is the way that the story is not told. But for the 58, for those men who came back from war and couldn't handle what they had experienced, couldn't handle the reality that they came back to, this is their story. And so the redemption has to be somehow that this daughter is reconnected with her father, that she introduces her new friend, her new boyfriend, to her father, and together they work through what it means to be redeemed from what they have done, to be redeemed from what they, as participants in a greater society, who benefit from that kind of violence, what does it mean for them to experience and receive redemption? Dostoevsky is a Russian writer from a long time ago, and he says, to love someone means to see him as God intended him. To love somebody means to see in them the worth and the value and the gifts and abilities that God gave that person. That's love. Why? Because God gave those gifts in love. God looks on us with love and wants us to look on each other with love. And so I'm not advocating that we look at returning soldiers as evil participants in an evil empire. They're not. Look beyond that and you will see people who want to support their families. We see people who want to provide stability, not just locally, but across the world. And we see people who have experienced real evil. And so when we look at them, in order for us to love them, we have to look beyond the uniform that they wear. Right? The woman in the billboard says, people respect me now because of this uniform that I'm wearing. And I believe Jesus says, I love you despite the uniform that you are wearing. A lot of us put on a uniform of something else, that we want to be something more. We inherit stories that are embarrassing for us. Bad things happen to us and we don't want people to know about that. We want to be a part of something bigger and better and stronger. And so ads like this woman wearing the uniform are appealing to us because it promises something deeper and better and bigger. But it's a lie. It's a lie. If we want to be loved, if we want to experience real love, Jesus offers that. Jesus doesn't love the persona that we take on, the uniform that we wear. Jesus doesn't care if you're a respected professional within your field. Jesus doesn't care if you have a good and happy, healthy family on the appearance. Jesus doesn't care if you're making 6-7 figures a year or if you're making nothing. Jesus loves you for who you are. Jesus knows your story. Jesus wants to be a part of your story. So take off the uniform that you're wearing. Whatever it is, that uniform doesn't make you better in God's eyes. Maybe in the eyes of the people around you, but that's not your story. When we draw ourselves closer to God, When we pray, when we read the Bible, we discover God's story, and there is room in God's story for us. And God wants to be a part of our story. So let's set aside surface stuff. None of that matters in the end. None of that stuff will bring you any comfort. But what will be the deeper bonds that we make with each other and the deeper relationship that we are able to form with God.